This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Coming from my own love for books and how important books of stories have been in my life, so the idea that reading does a lot of things, but growing your heart is the most important one. And finding books that you love that make you think big things and feel big things is not just a great way to pass the time, although it is. It's a way to connect with other people and to even make yourself a better person. If you can give a little more empathy and understanding for other people and what other people are going through, it sounds overdrawn to say it, but it makes the world a better place. The more people and the more kids that read books that make them think and feel big things and grow their heart a little bit, the better this world could be. And Lord knows it could use plenty of that at the moment. So, yeah.
Hey, everyone. I'm Bianca Schultz from the Children's Book Review, and this is the Growing Readers podcast, where we delve into the world of literature and storytelling with some of today's most acclaimed authors. In today's episode, we're joined by a true luminary in the world of middle grade fiction. Dan Gemeinhardt is a number one New York Times bestselling author known for his powerful narratives that resonate deeply with readers of all ages. With a captivating blend of heart, wisdom, and adventure, Dan's novels have earned him widespread acclaim and a dedicated following. His impressive repertoire includes beloved titles such as The Midnight Children, The Remarkable Journey of Coyote Sunrise, The Honest Truth, Some Kind of Courage, Scar Island, and Good Dog. Each of these stories offers a unique journey filled with rich characters, poignant themes, and unforgettable moments. But Dan's connection to storytelling runs even deeper. Before becoming a full-time writer, he spent years as an elementary teacher librarian, fostering a love of reading in countless young minds. Today, he continues to inspire readers worldwide from his home in a small town in Washington State, where he lives with his wife and three daughters. In this episode, we'll dive into Dan's latest novel, Coyote Lost and Found, a standalone companion to the modern classic, The Remarkable Journey of Coyote Sunrise. We'll explore the themes, inspirations, and challenges behind his writing process, as well as gain insights into his remarkable journey as an author. So join us as we embark on an unforgettable literary adventure with the one and only Dan Gemeinhardt. But first, here's the synopsis for Coyote Lost and Found. From number one New York Times bestselling author Dan Gemeinhardt comes a standalone companion to the critically acclaimed The Remarkable Journey of Coyote Sunrise, about a father and daughter who venture on a moving, uplifting, and rollicking cross-country road trip. It's been almost a year since Coyote and her dad left the road behind and settled down in a small Oregon town. Time spent grieving the loss of her mom and sisters and trying to fit in at school. But just as life is becoming a new version of normal, Coyote discovers a box containing her mom's ashes. And she thinks she might finally be ready to say goodbye. So Coyote and her dad gear up for an epic cross-country road trip to scatter the ashes at her mom's chosen resting place. The only problem? Coyote has no idea where that resting place is. And the secrets hidden in a book that Coyote mistakenly sold last year somewhere in the country. Now, it's up to Coyote to track down the treasured book without her dad ever finding out that it's lost. It's time to fire up their trusty bus, Jaeger, pick up some old friends, discover some new ones, and hit the road on another unforgettable adventure. Hi, Dan. Welcome back to the Growing Readers podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you're here today to talk about your beautiful Coyote, Lost and Found, which is the standalone companion novel to one of my all-time favorite books, The Remarkable Journey of Coyote Sunrise. But I need to start by asking you some very important questions to see if I can allow you onto the podcast bus. I hope that's okay.
It is okay.
All right. Well, I'm sure you've had these questions before, so I think you're going to have answers ready for me. What is your favorite book?
It's the easiest question or the hardest question, because I am such a book lover and such a book nerd, and I still read two or three books a week and have my whole life. And so I don't have one favorite or 10 favorites or 100 favorites. I've got a million favorites. And some of the ones that I give shout outs to in Coyote Sunrise are my favorites, which is why they're in there, like The One and Only Ivan and Walk Two Moons and Esperanza Rising and Ghost by Jason Reynolds. But I love Hatchet by Gary Paulson and Out of My Mind by Sharon Drake. And I mean, I could go on and on and on about all of my favorite books. Those are some of the ones that just popped into my head, but I've got, hundreds more, literally.
That is like, honestly, the perfect answer for a true just book lover. It's so impossible to answer that question with just one book. So I love that response. Next question. What is your favorite place in the world?
Well, the cheesy cop-out answer is wherever my family is, which is true, but also, come on. So my favorite place in the world, probably, I love the outdoors and I love, backpacking and hiking. And I live in North Central Washington State. And there's a really special place up in the mountains called the Enchantments, which is this group of these lakes way up above the tree line. And you have to have a special permit to go there because it's really fragile, but it's just beautiful. And there's waterfalls and creeks and mountain goats scampering around that have no fear because there's no predators. And it's just this magical place. So the Enchantments in the Alpine Lakes Wilderness area in the North Cascades is my favorite place.
I have to ask this question for Coyote. What is your favorite sandwich?
I kind of have two, and I was able to give both of them shout outs in my book. So probably my number one favorite is just the classic BLT, which is Coyote's favorite sandwich. Although I like to add avocado. So it's a blat, a bacon, lettuce, avocado, tomato. I think that's a perfect sandwich. But my close second, almost tied, is a Reuben, which I give a shout out to in the new book, Coyote Lost and Found.
Yes, you do. All right. Well, I have to ask you about the blat, because I love a good blat, but I love mine on focaccia bread. What kind of bread do you like it on?
I would like either a sourdough or just a good whole wheat bread.
Yeah, there you go. That's kind of classic. So, yeah. All right. Well, I think you're officially allowed on the podcast bus now. So one more question. What song would you pick to start our conversation road trip?
Ooh, how about, I love Langhorne Slim. He's a singer-songwriter, and he's gotten a shout out in both of these books as well. So I could go with almost anything by him. I guess I would say You Light the Rooms or The House of My Soul. It's the same song. It's got a kind of a subtitle. And that's just a great song that I would probably start us off with.
Okay, perfect. And I'm just going to apologize to listeners that I do not have permission to play that song, but let's just pretend it's playing now. I'd love to take a quick second to let listeners know that you and I had a great chat back in 2022, which it doesn't actually feel that long ago, about The Midnight Children. So congratulations, by the way, because that story reached number one New York Times bestseller status. So well done.
Thank you very much.
But you talked a lot about what drives you in writing for kids and your writing process. So I don't want to repeat questions here. So I really want listeners to go back and listen to that episode, because you had so many amazing, insightful responses. So everybody go back. It's 2022. It's a conversation with Dan about The Midnight Children. And I really don't think you should miss it if you haven't listened. But I just kind of want to go a little bit into your overall career. I mean, you're in like a decade now of writing. So what or who do you think has influenced your approach and outlook on your craft the most?
Oh, wow. Interesting question. Yeah, the decade sure flies by, doesn't it?
Like this, it sure does.
I was a teacher for years and 14 years, and I still think of myself as a teacher. And this is kind of like my weird little second act here. So I still feel it's very new to me. Like it's a fresh new chapter in my life, but it's been going for a while now. It's a long chapter, I guess. Who had the most influence on my craft? I don't like to always give cop-out answers, but just like my favorite book, I've been such a reader since as long as I can remember, from kindergarten. I just loved books. And I was one of those kids who would go to the library in the summers, the public library, and get a stack of books and read like a book a day. That was just how I spent my summers. And it still kind of do that. And so there's not like one author like, oh, I read this book or this author and that changed everything. And that's when I knew I wanted to be an author. I mean, that happened, but it happened like hundreds of times with so many great books. And so I don't think there is one that I could put my finger on. I mean, I loved Hatchet as a kid, like so many kids did. That was an amazing book by Gary Paulson. But also in fifth grade, my teacher did a read aloud of Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry by Mildred C. Taylor. And that was amazing. That showed me how powerful a book can be and not just be a fun story or entertaining, but it can like really teach you things about other human experiences in the world. And so that, you know, added a layer to my writing. But then seeing like the emotion, like, you know, when you're a kid and you read Where the Red Fern Grows and you're crying like a baby, like, wow, books aren't just informative or educational or entertaining. They can also like move you so deeply. I mean, like break your heart or make you laugh out loud. And so all of those stories over the last, we'll just say a few decades of me being a reader have added up to the, I guess, the inspiration, like, and still to this day, I'll read a great book and I'll say, holy cow, like, look what this author did. Look at all these things that I'm feeling. Look how either inspired or sad or joyful I feel just from these words on a page that this author wrote. I want to do that. I want to write a book maybe that could make someone feel something. And so it's an ongoing thing, this inspiration. It's not a past tense and it wasn't a one-time thing. It's just being a lifelong reader and wanting to be a part of that world, basically.
Well, I have to tell you, I'm not diving into the coyote stories just yet, but this latest one, I literally cried 4 separate times. So just well done that you did it. You moved not just me. I know you've made so many other people feel moved by this character and the other characters in the coyote stories. So I think the way you answered that question just makes sense as to how I read your writing.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And then in terms of your approach to writing and your process, are there any sort of ways that you went about getting your story out that you've kind of ditched now and taken on new methods? Like how has the way you approach your writing changed over the decade?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Well, you know, it hasn't gotten any easier. And, you know, every writer I talk to says the same thing. And so now I'm apparently almost a decade in and I'm working on, you know, my 8th book or whatever. And it's every single time it's a little overwhelming and a little daunting. And every single time I'm pulling my hair out and every single time I'm thinking, that's it. I'm a failure. This is terrible. No one's going to, every book I've ever written, it's just really hard, at least for me, to sit down and try to put a story together and to feel like you're hopefully getting it right. And so it's not any easier, but in some respects, some parts of it, like I'm better now at catching my mistakes before I make them. And so my rough drafts are still incredibly rough and I still do lots of revising and rewriting and editing. That's a huge part of the process, an incredibly important part of the process. But I used to make a lot of big mistakes constantly and not realize it until months or weeks or chapters later or on the third draft. And now I'm somewhat better at saying, oh, no, that's a dead end, or nope, that's not developed enough, or oh, this is going too fast, or this is going too slow, just because, you know, you do something enough and you start to get not so much knowledge or skill, but just kind of a feel for it. And so that's made my process a little better and a little less painful, is to see those things as they come and see them as some of the mistakes before I commit them to paper. But as far as the process, you know, I think it's pretty much the same. I'm not an outliner. I'm going to make it up as I go author for the most part. I often have some idea of some things that might happen, but I'm flexible and I get surprised every time. And a lot of times things don't turn out like I think they will. But yeah, and so that's still pretty much the same, even though I would love to be an outliner. And every time I think I'm going to do that, because wouldn't it be easier if I knew what was going to happen instead of just making it up and my brain just won't do it. I put part one on the outline and I write what happens first. And then I put number two and then I stop because my brain says, how could I possibly know what happens next? You haven't written the story yet. So that's pretty much the same. But yeah, it's a kind of a messy process every time. But at the end of the day or at the end of the book, it's always worth it.
I don't know who my absolute favorite book character is, but Coyote is definitely one of my all-time favorite book characters. So Coyote Lost and Found, as I said up front, is the highly anticipated follow-up to the beloved Coyote Sunrise. So what drew you back into Coyote and Rodeo's world, and how did you navigate the pressure of writing about such beloved characters again while ensuring you got the story just right?
Yeah, so I did approach it with some trepidation, like you said, because if you have a book that some people read and some people liked, you really, if you're going to write, you know, a next chapter in that character's life, you don't want it to be at all a disappointment. And you don't want anyone who liked the first book or loved the first book to say, oh, well, that was lame. You just don't want to do that. And so I really, really put my heart and soul into it. And why did I do it? Well, really, a couple of reasons. One, first and foremost, I just really love Coyote, like as a person, as a character. In a lot of my books, a lot of my stories, a lot of the work I do is trying to figure out this character and what would they think and what would they feel and who are they? And I do a lot of searching and brainstorming and throwing things away until I feel like I know what the kid might do or think or say. And both Coyote books, that never happened. Like I would open up the computer and Coyote would start talking in my head and I would write down what she said. And a lot of times it didn't even feel like writing. It just felt like I was dictating. She's for some reason, she's somewhere alive inside my head. And I never have to wonder what she would think or what she would feel because she's always more than ready to tell me. She's got a big personality and a big voice. And it's just, I was super lucky. It's one of those things I'm grateful for that Coyote just comes to life in my head. And so when I finished book one, I thought, man, I would love to spend more time with this kid. Like I got to spend every day with her for a year. And then I finished the book. And then it was like my new best friend moved away and I didn't get to see her anymore. But of course you need a plot, a story. You can't just have a character. And so that's why there was so many years in between, because kind of the first part, I really wanted that to not be a disappointment and to feel as important and as relevant and memorable as the first one, which is tricky because the first one's a pretty big story with pretty big stuff going on. And so finally, though, I got this idea, the idea for Coyote Lost and Found. And then I set aside what I was working on. I jumped right back into it and Coyote started talking right off the bat, page one, and off I went. And so, yeah, it's been a real joy to write Coyote again and to see how people have embraced her and embraced the books. It's just really wonderful. And I'm super grateful for it.
Well, I'm going to be honest. When I picked it up, because I loved the first book so much, I was so nervous to actually, as a reader, to read the second one because I didn't want you to let me down. And of course, you absolutely did not let us down. I mean, it's so true that this is a standalone story and it stands alone at the same level as the first story. I mean, you nailed it. So just congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much.
Your books are definitely known for their vibrant characters and pretty authentic voices. So you said Coyote just seems to be almost fully formed as a character, but how do you approach character development to just ensure that these characters do feel relatable and engaging to your readers?
Yeah, well, I mean, characters are the most important part of the story. And I say this when I do like writer's workshops with young writers or adult writers, is that that's the engine of your story. That's the heart of your story. The character is way more important than the plot because almost anything could happen in the plot. Does it matter if Coyote meets a goat in the first book or a sheep? No. Does it matter if their brakes go out or not? Not really. What matters is what it means to the character, how the character feels about it, what choices the character makes. That's all that really matters. And if your reader cares about your character, they'll care about your story. If they don't care about your character, they won't care about your story. Even if you have the coolest story in the whole world and you've got this awesome plot with this amazing climax with a car chase and a gunfight, but if your reader doesn't care whether your main character wins or loses, lives or dies, they're not going to care about that car chase because they don't care about who's in the car. And so that's what I spend most of my time thinking on. I don't spend that much time thinking about plot. Like, well, maybe this happens. Let's give it a shot. But I do spend a lot of time and work thinking, is this right for the character? Is this what the character would do? Because once you start the story and you've got a character built who hopefully feels like a real person, it's kind of out of your hands as an author. I don't get to decide what happens next. If it's a good story and I'm doing my job right, the character decides what happens next. And I would hit that with Coyote sometimes, a couple of times. In the first book, I remember there's the scene where her dad leaves her behind at a gas station. It's kind of an early scene. That's where she meets Salvador. And I wrote that scene the first time as a kind of a funny scene. And she was like, oh, daddy, I'm going to give him such a hard time for this. You know, what a flake. Because that's kind of the relationship they have, but it just wouldn't work. And Coyote just kept like digging in her heels. And I could not make that scene work because she was saying, no, like, yes, I'm I'm brave and I'm courageous. I've got the strong personality, but I'm still a kid and I lost the rest of my family and I've never been away from my dad. And it's not fun or funny when all of a sudden I'm alone in the world, but the one person I have is gone. And so then that I had to rewrite that whole scene where it's not funny or fun to her at all. And she doesn't take it lightly because think about that. She lost her sisters. She lost her mom. And now she's alone at a gas station and she's lost her dad. And it's so she said, no, that's not how it goes, author. This is how it goes. And there was similar in the beginning of Coyote Lost and Found. So they've kind of settled down. Her and Rodeo, they still have the bus, but they're living in a house and she's going to school, which is something she really wanted to do. And I thought, oh, isn't this going to be fun? And Coyote's going to have some quirky friends and we're going to see her, you know, happy, finally living this life she thought she wanted to live. But the same thing happened. She was like, no, that's not how this goes because, you know, Coyote's great. I love Coyote, but she's definitely kind of a weirdo. She's not going to fit in and she's not going to lay low and slide under the radar. And so she is having problems in school, having problems making friends, having problems with the other kids, which I didn't see coming. I didn't want to have happen, but it wasn't up to me. That's just what Coyote told me was going to happen. And so that's what I try to do as a writer is try to build these characters, make them feel alive, and then kind of honor them and follow their lead because that way the story will feel more real and more natural and more believable.
Yeah, well, you kind of touched on a few things I want to go deeper on. And so I'm going to go here first. So I've definitely noticed themes of being friendless or managing loneliness and also fitting in. It comes up a lot for your various characters. So talk to me a little bit about those themes and working those into your characters.
Totally, especially the fitting in, where do I belong? I mean, that is really one of the central themes, I think, of almost every middle grade novel by anybody, because those are just the big questions that you deal with in those middle grade years of your life, from the time you're 9 to 19 or whatever, when you're not just your parents' kid anymore, where you're figuring out who you are and who you want to be and who you're going to be and who your friends are and who your friends aren't. And you really start creating yourself as a person in those adolescent years. I mean, it's a hugely important time in your life. And so kind of every middle grade book is about that, no matter what the genre or whatever. Usually, almost always at the center of it is a kid who's trying to figure out who they are, who they want to be, where they belong. I just finished a great book on Beyond the Bright Sea by Lauren Wolk. And that is an entirely different story than any of my stories. But still, in a lot of ways, at the end of the day, that main character, Crow, who is a fantastic character, it's really about her trying to figure out who she is and where she belongs and who she wants to be. Even though it's, you know, set in whatever, 1910 on an island off Massachusetts, she's asking the same questions and dealing with the same things as Coyote and as Rivani from Midnight Children and Joseph from Some Kind of Courage and as Jonathan from Scar Island. That's just kind of what middle grade books are kind of all about for the most part. Not always, but it's such a universal, powerful theme. I mean, as far as the loneliness, yeah, you know, I don't know where that always comes from. And some of my characters are like that, maybe most of them. And I don't know if that comes like from my own childhood. As a kid, we moved around a ton. And so I was always the new kid in school and the new kid in class. I was always leaving friends behind and hopefully trying to make new friends. So, you know, trying to figure out where I fit in, feeling a little unmoored and lonely at times. And sometimes I didn't fit in. And there's chunks of my life or places that I lived where I was kind of lonely and friendless and bullied, and that wasn't great. And so that's, you know, somewhere inside of me for sure. And maybe that subconsciously is coming out in these characters. But you know, those are things that kids deal with. Not all kids. Some kids are, you know, really social. They're great. They have lots of friends. They've got best friends and they're doing great. Thank goodness for those kids. Congratulations. But a lot of kids, you know, you're dealing with those questions of identity and belonging, and it can be a really fun, exciting time in your life. It can really be also a kind of a sad, scary, lonely time in your life.
Yeah. And I also just love the way, I think in life, outside of these fictional characters, we end up creating friendships or allyships in people that we can connect to in a way that we see each other. You know, we feel seen in that friendship, and we may have had completely different backgrounds, completely different things going on, but you end up connecting with people because there's something that you can see and honor in one another. And I often see that in your characters, is that I feel like what brings them together is that they honor something within each other. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes a lot. I've never thought about it that way, but that makes a lot of sense. And I do that somewhat on purpose and somewhat not on purpose, where, yeah, we think like, so in the first book, or actually the second one, same. When Coyote's on the road and different people join their group after answering those three questions, I try to think like, what does each one of them bring to the table? How are they the same as Coyote? How are they different? Basically, what is she going to learn from them? There's each one of them is just like in real life. Every person you meet is kind of a reflection of yourself in some way, or a reflection of not yourself, like a very different person. But they help you get some perspective maybe on your own life and your own circumstances. And Coyote is certainly that way. When she meets Val and when she meets Salvador, those people, and then in this book, when she meets Wally and Doreen, those people are not just great people in their own right, which hopefully they are, and interesting characters in their own right, which hopefully they are, but they also give her some wisdom and perspective on what she herself is going through.
You brought up Coyote and her dad just before rodeo. Let's talk about the relationship between them. I love their relationship. It's not necessarily a traditional dad and daughter relationship. So, without any spoilers, if that's possible, can you discuss the evolution of their relationship throughout the two books? And what aspects of their bond do you find most compelling to explore?
Ooh, well, that's a good question. Yeah, that relationship is at the heart of certainly of the first book and at the second one as well. The relationship between Coyote and her father, because it's really, really complicated. And it's in a lot of respects, or at least a couple of respects, dysfunctional. It's not a great relationship in some ways, even though Coyote, I think, is a great person, and Rodeo is a pretty great person, and he loves Coyote. No one could read either one of these books and not think palpably that Rodeo really loves Coyote. But is he always a good dad? Is he always what she needs him to be? And the answer, especially in the first book, is absolutely not. In fact, in a lot of respects, even though he's a great guy and he loves Coyote, he's kind of a terrible dad, because he's really broken and he is doing what he can more to take care of himself than to take care of her. And that's what a lot of the first book about is her, getting the courage and learning to advocate for herself and saying, I don't think it's my job anymore to take care of you. You're the parent. Maybe you should take care of me, or maybe at least I should take care of myself. And so her advocating for herself and her own needs instead of just trying to protect him. Because, spoiler alert, but not really a spoiler, 5 years ago, this tragedy happened to her and her dad, where her mom and her two sisters were killed in a car accident. And he's still completely broken by that. And so their relationship is complicated. And he also, in the first book, not so much in the second one, but in the first book, he also basically plays the role of the villain. He's not a villain. He's not evil at all. But if a villain is just the opposing force, if the villain is what gets in your main character's way in whatever they're trying to achieve or pursue or whatever, that's the role he plays, because she needs to go home and he will never allow that to happen because it's too painful for him. And so he plays the role of the villain, even though he's not a villainous guy. And so that was really complicated to suss all that out, to make him be kind of the villain, but not a villain, to make him be someone that we like and someone we can still root for and someone we can still, want Coyote to end up with. If he's a pure villain, then how do you end that book in a satisfying way? And how do you tell this new story in a satisfying way? So he's got to be a great guy and a loving father who's just a mess and who messes up a lot. And that holds through into this one. He's doing much better in the second book. And he's a much better father, but it is. And I think that's the most compelling part of the relationship, is the way they try and sometimes fail to take care of each other. And no one could read these books and doubt it, is their complete love for each other. Rodeo would do anything for a Coyote, and Coyote would do anything for Rodeo, even though they're both kind of a mess and their relationship is a mess. The love at the center of it is like undoubtable.
Absolutely. All right. Well, this is now the perfect time to talk about the level of grief and healing that's central to the narrative of both books. So, talk to me about what it takes for you to tackle these heavy themes in a way that is accessible and meaningful for your middle grade audience, and especially the kids who may be navigating their own experiences of loss and change.
Yeah, and that's a great question. Obviously, a really important question, because it's not just a fun plot point that this terrible thing happened, or isn't this a fun concept? Like it's heavy stuff and it's important stuff. It's life stuff. And when you're talking about real life stuff, so parents or families that are dealing with this stuff, it's like sacred ground. And so basically approach it as carefully and respectfully and thoughtfully and sensitively as I can. And I think about those kinds of things all the time and think about different readers reading this. So what if it's being read by someone who did recently lose a parent or a parent who lost a child or whatever? So you don't just write for yourself. You try to be cognizant and respectful of other readers and other readers' experiences. And so it's a lot of, well, all of my writing, but especially that kind of stuff is a lot of sitting there not writing, of closing my eyes and imagining the scene, imagining the character, imagining the feelings, and trying to thread that needle as right as I can. And really putting myself as much as I possibly can. I've never suffered a loss like Rodeo and Coyote suffer, thank goodness. But try to put myself, what would that really, so I'll sit there for, you know, an hour without writing, just thinking about how would I feel? How would I process that? What are some good ways I could might handle that? What are some bad ways I might handle that to make it feel realistic and to get it to be as real as I can? And I'm always super grateful when I get like messages from readers of any age. I get, you know, emails from 8-year-olds and emails from 80-year-olds, and most of them are nice, which is good. The ones where it's from a kid or from a parent or from a teacher where they've gone through something like what Coyote goes through, and they say that I got it right. And nothing could make me feel more relieved, but also more grateful when they say like, oh, me and my daughter read this because, you know, a year ago she lost her mom and we both, you know, we loved it and we want to read the next one or whatever. Or I've got a student who just lost their sibling and they came to me with tears in their eyes and said this was the best book. And so to think that maybe sometimes I get that right when it's really important life, soul, family stuff, not just a fun plot device. That's a great feeling. So basically, long answer. I really work hard to do the best that I can because it's not just a story. It's bigger than that.
A few things just came up for me with your response. Is one, not that I imagined that you had experienced a loss and tragedy as Coyote did, but it almost surprised me at the same time when you said that wasn't an experience. Because with writing, you can be reading a book and it can be really great, and you can come along to a spot where maybe the writing gets a bit clunky and it kind of takes you out of the story. And I think what makes you a really great writer is that I never get that. Like, I, from beginning to end, I'm invested in the story and it's fully believable. And so I think that's why when you said that you haven't experienced that, and I'm not even sure why I would assume that you had experienced that, it felt so true. I would also say what else came up for me is that I haven't experienced a tragedy like that, but I have experienced loss. And when you experience loss, it never goes away. It's always there. But your days improve and your feelings improve and you process it. And I just love that somehow the way you've written this, I think it shares this message that there is no one way to process and to grieve. And whatever it looks like for you is okay. And it doesn't come across like the way Coyote and her family deal with this as preachy, or I mean, I just felt so invested in the story and it just really felt so lovely the way they process it. But I also got the feeling that it wouldn't matter how you process it as the reader if it was in a different way.
No, I appreciate that. And you're right. Like, it's this is how Coyote and Rodeo handled it. Rodeo doesn't handle it very well, quite frankly. And Coyote's doing the best you can. And even in Coyote Lost and Found, without giving anything away, at the end, there's a scene with Coyote and Rodeo and Doreen, and they're making a choice about how to grieve, basically, you could say, or how not to grieve, or how to lay things to rest or not lay things to rest. And it's a scene at a pond, and Doreen makes a different choice than Coyote. And I did that on purpose to kind of show what you're saying. Like, you do what you think is best for you. And you're talking about grief and things like that. And there is maybe no one right way to do it. And different people are ready for different things and respond to different things. And that's, it's very complicated. And it's big to deal with these feelings. And so be gentle with yourself.
The story is set against the backdrop of the pandemic. So talk to me about this aspect, because you've done a really nice job of making it clear which era the story takes place in, but it doesn't dominate the story at all. It's just almost like a factual part of the story. So just talk to me about that.
Right. When that, I was kind of delighted to do that, which sounds kind of weird, but because as I was coming up with the story and trying to put it together in my head, I finally got, you know, the plot idea. I was post-pandemic, or probably mid-pandemic, post-pandemic, when I was putting it together. And it just struck me odd, especially now in 2024, that the pandemic and the lockdowns was a big, crazy, traumatic event for our society and for our kids, like my readers. And what I think is so strange is how you don't see it portrayed anywhere. Like if you watch TV shows and movies and read books, you don't even see it. Like we're also these kids, let's say my eighth grade reader. So in fourth grade, their lives came to a screeching halt and the world came to a screeching halt and they were stuck at home and they were wearing masks. And then now it is a couple years later and you don't see any of that in TV or movies or books. We're all like pretending that it never happened, which I think is so weird. But also you don't want to make it historical fiction. This is what life in the pandemic was like, because that takes more distance and time and perspective. And also then it would become a different story, become a pandemic story instead of this coyote story. But I thought, let's just put that in the background. So that's what's going on in the world. And it did kind of help with the plot as well. So when she wants to go on this quest for her second book, she is going to school. So, oh, well, that's not going to work. You can't go on a 10-day road trip if you're going to school. Well, what if this is right in March 2020 and school gets shut down? And so tiniest of silver linings, I'm not making light of COVID. I mean, a lot of people died. It was a tragic event. But the slimmest of silver linings is this does allow Coyote to go on this adventure. And so, yeah, in the book, it's not a huge part of the story, but stores are closed. Restaurants are closed. They have to wear masks. She's out of school. And so like acknowledging to kids, hey, remember that crazy thing that happened to you and your friends and your family? Yeah, it really did happen. And it wasn't super fun. And it was weird and scary and confusing. And so let's have that in the background of this story.
I would love it if you could share a highlight from the book. Like it could be a favorite moment.
I will say that there's a couple. Okay, I'll say two. Two scenes that just kind of rose to my mind as scenes that I enjoyed. And also like so much of writing or anything creative is whether or not you like a scene or something is not so much the scene itself or how great it is or how not great it is, but how much it comes out in line with how you pictured it, right? Like if you're doing a drawing and you've got this drawing in your head and then you try to draw it with a pen and paper, your happiness with the drawing is going to be based mostly on does it look like you wanted it to, right? And so two scenes that I had this clear image of not just what would happen, but how they would feel and how they would land and how they would wrap up. And they came out like I was hoping, basically. I'm not saying they're great scenes, but they came out in line with how I wanted them to come out, which is not always the case. A lot of times there's a lot of throwing away and scratching out and trying again and trying again and trying again. But these ones, I was like, oh, that's what I was shooting for. That's a good day of writing. So one is, without giving anything away, a scene where they're driving down the road and you'll, if you've read it, you'll know the scene. And they open up all the windows and put the music on loud. And then something terrible happens with her mother's ashes. And you can probably, if you haven't read, you could probably guess just from how I set that up. And it is terrible, but it's also kind of funny. And that's an idea I had. Would this scene work? Would it land? And I wrote it and I thought, yeah, that's what I wanted. That's what I was picturing. So that scene, the blowout scene, and another much quieter scene, a scene that happens on the roof of the bus between Coyote and good old Salvador, where she is feeling really low and she needs a friend. And he's just a great friend and he knows the right things to say. It has to do with caterpillars and butterflies, basically, but hopefully not as quite as cliche and cheesy as that sounds. But as soon as I said it, I was like, oh man, does that sound cliche? But it's a little, an odd little angle on it. It's not normally what you might think. And so I that conversation, again, the scene did what I wanted it to do, where hopefully it makes a believable transformation from where Coyote was, which was feeling hopeless and terrible, to where she needed to be, which still feels pretty terrible, but maybe seeing the start of a path forward, thanks to the awesome friendship of Salvador. And so those two scenes kind of rose to my mind.
And I just say I'm so glad that you brought up the blowout scene because I wanted to talk about it, but I was afraid to talk about it because I just didn't. I'm always like, oh, I don't want to do the spoiler thing. So I'm sitting there. I'm reading that scene. I'm like kind of tearing up. I'm kind of laughing. And I'm thinking to myself, I can picture this so vividly. This is a movie scene. I would love to see this with a movie, like the music on. Like, this was so amazing. This has to be a movie. And then I remembered that you recently just posted that The Remarkable Journey of Coyote Sunrise has been picked up for film rights. So I was like, I have to ask, when can we expect a movie? Will it be a movie that blends the two stories together? Is there going to be a movie of the second? I mean, tell us everything.
Hollywood is a weird business and I don't understand it. Like, I get these cryptic little emails. And so I've got nothing to do with this. But yeah, we sold the rights for The Remarkable Journey of Caddy Sunrise to be made into a movie. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. I mean, these studios buy 100 books a year and maybe one of them actually makes it into a project. But it made it past a bunch of the first few hurdles that end up stopping a lot of projects. Like, there's a director signed under contract, a great director. And there is a screenwriter signed who finished a script that got approved. And they've got producers and they've got a production company and funding, which is a really big deal. And so it could be happening. And I don't know. When I first got sold the movie rights, which was years ago, someone said, you know, don't get excited because these things happen incredibly slowly or more likely not at all. And that was good advice because that was like 5 years ago that we sold the rights and they just made the announcement. So I have no idea. But again, it's looking like a couple of years ago, I would have said it's probably not going to happen. And now I might say it's probably going to happen. I don't know if I can use the word probably or not, but it's far from impossible. And it's great people working on it and great companies working on it. So maybe hopefully someday. But as far as the other parts of the question, I don't think it would be a mashup or anything because they already have a script of the first one, a completed screenplay by a good, great, qualified screenwriter. And so, no, but I mean, gosh, that would be fun. But yeah, I'm glad you liked the blowout scene because it was a weird scene because it's kind of funny and it's kind of tragic and it's kind of gross. And then it's also kind of sweet at the end. There's some moments between Coyote and Rodeo, and to try to weave all that into one kind of crazy scene. That's why I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. And then it came out kind of like I was hoping. And so then it feels good when that happens.
Yeah. Well, for what it's worth, for anybody that's listening, I don't know everybody who listens to the podcast, Dan, but I mean, gosh, I sure hope the first movie 100% is made. And then I just want to see the blowout scene from the second book in a movie so badly. So I've got my fingers crossed.
Me too.
All right. Well, what do you hope that readers will take away from Coyote Lost and Found and both books as a whole? And, you know, any specific messages or themes that feel most important to you?
That's a great question. But at the end of the day, I have always got my audience in mind. Like, some writers say, oh, you know, never think about who's going to read it. Like, you got to, whatever, follow your muse, be true to the story. And I think that's ridiculous, at least for people writing for kids. Like, I think about my audience all the time because they're busy and they've got sports and school and phones and video games and there's a lot going on in their lives and a lot of going on in their hearts, right? And so I always think about my readers, and what I really want at the end of the day every time is a story that they like. I want them to be entertained. I want them to keep turning the pages. I want them to get to the end and love reading it. Do I want them to think about some things, hopefully, and feel some big things? Sure, of course. And those themes are really important. The emotions I put in there, I work really hard on that. But if at the end of the day, if all they do is sit down and read it and think it's a good story and never think any deeper than that, I'm totally okay with that because, hey, there's a kid sitting down and reading a book. That being said, sure, I guess what I would hope for as far as walking away from this one is, like any book, all the books that I've mentioned, and I've talked about being a lifelong reader, hopefully a book that you read that you connect with just makes your heart a little bit bigger, a little bit more empathetic, a little bit more understanding and accepting of others and what other people might be going through. Because, you know, stories are great ways for us to think about our own lives and even to get ready for things in our own lives. Because maybe when you reader reads this book, it makes them think about loss. It makes them think about grief and think about what they would do or think or feel if something happened to someone they loved. And maybe if or when that happens, they'll be a little more ready because their heart already kind of tried that on a little bit. Or if something happens to someone and their friend loses something, they'll have maybe a little bit more empathy or compassion in their heart, understanding because they've already worked through some of those thoughts. So any story that you connect with, I think the end goal is to make your heart and make your understanding a little bit bigger than when you started. So that's what I'd be going for in this book and in for all my books.
Well, beautiful. Well, so when we're talking about making your heart a bit bigger and for all your books, we have to talk about what's coming up next for you as an author. And I got to read your super heartwarming picture book. It comes out in June of 2024 and it's Once Upon a Friend. And I have to tell you that before I picked it up, I read the summary and it said it's for fans of Beakle by Dan Santet, Toy Story, and Inside Out. And as soon as I read the Inside Out part, I mean, my heart instantly broke. I was like, oh my gosh, is this a book that's going to make me tear up? Because all I could think about was Bing Bong in Inside Out when Bing Bong disappears. My family makes so much fun of me. I cry hysterically when, well, spoiler if you haven't watched Inside Out, but sorry, but when Bing Bong disappears. So anyway, I was like, yes, I need to read this book. I loved it. And the gorgeous cover, and I hope I pronounced the illustrator's name correctly, Xinhuan Moon. It has Bing Bong vibes all over the cover to me. So I'm going to stop rambling. And I want you to tell listeners what they can expect from your upcoming picture book, Once Upon a Friend.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you very much. The art, I had nothing to do with the art. I want to be really clear, but I love it. It's beautiful. It's amazing to, you know, write a story, just the words for me, just the words. And then to have another human being, another artist, to bring that to life in their own unique, beautiful way is awesome to watch. And you're not really involved as the author. You're not involved. They show you some rough drafts kind of, and if there's something like kind of factually wrong, you could give some notes like, oh, I was picturing it more like this. But other than that, you want them to do their job and to take whatever inspiration they have and express themselves through their medium, which is not words, which is pictures. And so I love how it turned out. So it is a story about, well, it really boils down to one of the lines in the book, which is a friend you make in a book is a friend you never have to leave behind. And it's kind of, it came out of my own childhood and what books meant to me and those books you read and love as a kid. And nobody loves a book the way a kid loves a book, and how those books and the characters in those books can be like your friends, and they can be a through line through your life. As you face things in your own life and face challenges, you can look to those characters and the stories that you love for comfort or inspiration and for courage. And so for me growing up, there's like the Berenstain Bears and stuff. And then with my own kids, reading Junie B. Jones and Elephant and Piggy and the Berenstain Bears and the Princess in Black and Mercy Watson, like these characters are not just, you know, whatever, ink on a page you look at before you go to bed. Like they become a part of your family and a part of your life, and you never have to say goodbye to them. And you can either remember them yourself for your whole life, or someday, if you're lucky, you can, you know, share them with kids of your own, and you get to introduce your old friend to your new friend, kind of. And so that's basically what the book is about. I mean, there's more of a plot, I guess. It's not just poetic ramblings, but it's about, yes, a kid, a reader, and the book character who is their friend, and how that gets them through tough times and stays in their heart and in their lives as they grow older.
Yeah. And this might be the most random comment of mine for the day, but as you're talking, I'm like, it's kind of like if The Giving Tree had a better ending, like a more fulfilling ending as well. Like there's this books give and give to you. And I don't want to spoil the ending, but I feel like you nailed it. And it just, as a parent, and parents are often the ones reading the picture books to their children, this is a story that the kids are going to love, but it's also a story that's going to hit the parents in the heart, the parents that read to their kids every night that they can, the parents that love having their kids on their lap and reading a picture book. When you get to this final page, you're going to be like, yes, heart explosions.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'm going to push back. I love Giving Tree. I know Giving Tree is a controversial book and some people loathe it. It was one of my favorite books as a kid, and it's weird and it's dark and it's unsettling. But I think that's kind of what it's supposed to be. And so anyway, yeah, I'm a big fan of The Giving Tree for all of its weird, dark quirkiness. So I think it's got the perfect ending, but I also understand why some people say, gosh, what kind of a kid's book is this? Totally fair.
Yeah, no, and I hear you. I feel like I sit right in the middle because I like that darker side of it. And it's a pondering book and a book of conversation. But for the people that really don't like the way that ends, I feel as though if I drew a parallel between the Giving Tree and Once Upon a Friend, I feel like you give them the satisfying ending that their hearts are going to crave. So
good. Thank you.
All right. Well, how different is it for you to write a middle grade novel versus a picture book?
Oh, I mean, it's night and day. It's in every possible way. And I mean, a picture book does take less time. It's whatever, 200 words instead of 80,000 words, but it doesn't necessarily take less effort or less work because I mean, I would just, you know, struggle over and torture myself over every little word or comma, because if you've only got whatever 170 words to tell your story, every word counts. Like in a chapter book, I can throw three paragraphs at something. I can throw a whole chapter at something, paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs to make a point or to set a scene or whatever. And you don't get to do any of that in a picture book. Like you, it's just the most important things boiled down. And so it's mostly cutting and it's real, a whole different process. And also you have to leave a lot of room for the illustrator. And so any sort of physical description you end up cutting out, which are helpful for your rough drafts for yourself, so you know what's going on. But all of that stuff gets cut out along the way, because I don't need to say he walked in the room, because that'll be in the picture, right? And so even learning that, like my editor would be like, I see all these descriptions, they're all gone. I was like, what? And he's like, they're going to be in the picture. Well, of course they are. So I had to, luckily I've got a great editor, Brian Geffen. He's amazing. And he was the editor of Coyote Lost and Found and Midnight Children as well. And so he was, you know, showed me the ropes and helped me through that process. But yeah, it's fun. It's because I had written plenty of novels, and it's fun to, you know, flex your muscles in different ways and try new things and learn new skills to struggle with something new. I think it's good for your heart and your soul and your brain. And so it was really, really fun and really rewarding. And I've got a couple more picture books coming out. I've got one in 2025 and one in 2026. And so it's fun to have other things to work on and to struggle with, basically, but in a struggle that's fun and turns out with a finished product that I'm super proud of and happy to have out there in the world.
All right. Well, for our closing question, of all the things that we spoke about today, and we spoke about a lot, what's the one most important point that you would love the Growing Readers listeners to take away?
Ooh, that's really interesting. I think that it would be, I guess that idea, just coming from my own love for books and how important books of stories have been in my life. So the idea that reading does a lot of things, but growing your heart is the most important one. And finding books that you love that make you think big things and feel big things is not just a great way to pass the time, although it is. It's a way to connect with other people and to even make yourself a better person. If you can give a little more empathy and understanding for other people and what other people are going through, it sounds overdrawn to say it, but it makes the world a better place. The more people and the more kids that read books that make them think and feel big things and grow their heart a little bit, the better this world could be. And Lord knows it could use plenty of that at the moment. So yeah, yay books, I guess, is the main idea of my most important point.
Yes. I mean, I think that's perfect. Yay books. And I gushed enough about your writing and your stories. I fully wholeheartedly mean it. Coyote is one of my all-time favorite characters that I have ever read. So for anyone who hasn't read these books, please do yourself a favor and pick them up. And for anybody that has read them, I sure hope that you have enjoyed our conversation with Dan as much as I've had having it. So thank you, Dan, for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always delightful. You are fantastic questions that really challenge me, make me think harder and deeper about what I'm saying. So it was a joy and an honor. So thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us on this quest for growing readers. To learn more about Dan Gemeinhardt and explore his captivating world of storytelling, visit him at dangemeinhardt.com. Don't forget to check out our show notes for that link and to order copies of Coyote Lost and Found and Once Upon a Friend. And remember, if you love listening to the Growing Readers podcast, you can hear it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you enjoy listening. Be sure to follow and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast platform to get new episodes as soon as they launch. If you're enjoying our book chats, please leave us a review. And while you're at it, grab your phone and text a friend you know who would love to listen to this episode. The Growing Readers Podcast is a production of the Children's Book Review. For more inspiring reads like Dan Gemeinhardt's Coyote Lost and Found and Once Upon a Friend, visit us at thechildrensbookreview.com.